It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. It is time for our all-star panel show. Yes, every week we bring some of the greatest minds in the political arena together to take a look at the week's insanity. Yes, Wingnut Week in review, but also the top stories of the week. In this week's panel, our good friend Scott Dworkin, co-founder of the Democratic Coalition. Scott, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Rich Ojeda, the spokesperson for the group No Dems Left Behind. Rich, thanks for being here.
Hey, Bowen.
And, of course, the professor, our good friend Brett Pransky. Brett, thanks for being here.
Hey, always a pleasure.
So this week, the story that came out, ProPublica came out with the story that we all know. We all know, not shocking, but they got the documents. The documents show that, surprise, surprise, rich people don't pay taxes. Let's start with the most obvious. Anybody surprised with this? Let's start with you, Brett.
No, not at all. I mean, I'm surprised that the information got out. I'm not surprised by the fact that rich people, one, don't pay their taxes, and two, the only outrage we seem to be seeing about this report on the right is Republicans who want to investigate how the information got out in the first place, which I just find hilarious.
Yeah, anything you added, you, Rich?
What I saw was Warren Buffett, you know, pays basically a dime for every $100 that he has. And the average citizen in this country pays around $24 for every $100 that they make. I mean, it's gross. Yeah. This is absolutely sickening.
No, but here again, you know, Warren Buffett's one of those guys who for a long time has been saying, you know, there's class warfare going on and my class is winning, but they shouldn't be. And he has said years ago that he shouldn't be paying less taxes than his secretary, except none of the policymakers seem to want to listen. Scott, any shock, any surprise, any anything?
No, I just, you know, maybe Jeff Bezos can go to space and not come back. You know, pay your workers. I saw that come out on top of this, that he's going to space. And that's what I wrote, is I was like, hey, you know, maybe you should pay your workers instead and actually do a good job, spread the wealth. You know, I mean, it's just disgusting. We've spoken about this before. I don't understand the greed and the level of just evil, because at some point, if you're hoarding all that cash and you don't actually need it, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing with your life? You know, you have the opportunity to contribute to society at a level that other human beings may never even come close to. And you can save lives immediately. So if I were that rich, I would be spending that money in the right ways where, you know, you distribute it throughout the world of people in need and working on feed and infrastructure, sanitary conditions, and water across the world. Like, you can do so many great things. Like, why do you need 30, 50, $80 billion? Like, you don't. You're just sitting there and you're going to have a family foundation and eventually give it all away anyways, or your children will steal it from you in a Dateline episode. Like, something will happen with it. But rich need to pay taxes. I just don't understand. If you have the money, why can't you pay tax? Why wouldn't you be happy to pay tax? Like, I just wouldn't. I don't understand that.
Hey, Rick, I want to kind of jump on that right there, because we were talking about, you know, Jeff Bezos going to space, and he's actually asking our government to basically give him $10 billion to go to space, but he just spent $8.5 billion to purchase Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer studios. So, you know, I mean, you're talking about people that have money that they could do anything in this world that they want, and they're still looking at the government to try to chip in for them? No. Sickening.
No, it is sickening. And with Bezos, there one of the reports did come out is that he actually took some child tax credit money that was meant for people making under $100,000. And you go, here's a guy worth, you know, billions multiple times. And, you know, he's putting in for that. Got to get that $1,000 tax credit for each of the kids, because we need a little extra cheese on our Whopper.
Sad.
Brett, you want to jump in?
Well, I think I just saw just earlier today that since the whole Jeff Bezos going to space story came out, I think Richard Branson is going to try to beat him into space. So this is what we have now. We have, you know, a space race between two rich guys who each would be better off trying to make the world better in some way. And I think we talked about this earlier in the week in our blog about how, you know, they're essentially these ultra wealthy people are essentially superheroes or potentially superheroes, because that's how power in the real world manifests. When it's not in a comic book, you know, power is wealth. And just like the old comic book story about, you know, with great power comes great responsibility, you know, you would expect these people who have this kind of world changing power to at least acknowledge some of the responsibility that comes along with that, the same way Spider-Man would. You know what I mean? I have these powers. I am special. I have this ability to make, you know, monumental change. It is therefore incumbent upon me to make the world around me better. This isn't a hard concept. This is what our grandparents taught us. And the fact that when you're a billionaire, you know, this no longer applies is just disgusting. I mean, when you think about it this way, imagine if they hoarded anything that wasn't money. Imagine if they were hoarding that share of the world's food or that share of the world's medicine. They would universally be thought of as monsters. But when they're hoarding that share of the world's wealth, all of a sudden we lift them up and so they're now something to aspire to. It's absolutely disgusting and something we need to do something about.
No,
I would just sit all day and tweet Dogecoin memes if I were a billionaire. I mean, like it really doesn't make any sense to me. And I just think that you're right, that there's efforts that could there's so many things going on. I mean, we're in the middle of a pandemic and they're talking about going to space. Like, what are you talking about? People are dying. Like, you can help them. I get the whole development. We can wait on that. Like, seriously, like, help some people here. Do something with your life.
But you look at this, you know, we've privatized our space program. We've privatized it to where it's now a game for the wealthy. And we've done that by saying that we're going to cut taxes to the point to where, you know, you don't have to pay. And in fact, there were a number of years where Bezos paid nothing. And you go, I had someone say to me, well, the tax system's broken. No, the tax system is not broken. The tax system is working exactly the way it's supposed to be working. The wealthy don't pay anything. And you, me, and the rest of us, we're the ones who foot the bill. And Rich, to your point, you know, we're the ones who pick up the check every time. We're the ones who clean up after their messes. We're the ones who are always holding the bag. But at least we have these icons. We have these billionaires that we can look up to.
But what about their legacy? I mean, you know, is your legacy going to be that you allowed people to starve so that you could win with the most toys?
Yeah.
Or is your legacy going to be that you single-handedly made sure that every single pipe in this country that was led by, you know, is gone, and now people have access to clean drinking water? These people could end homelessness today. They could end world hunger today. I mean, it's so sickening that the things that they're doing with their wealth are really, I mean, first and foremost, if anybody thinks we're watching these people have a race to space, we're never going to be able to get a ticket on any of them ships. We're not ever going to go to space. If they ever figure out how they can move people to another planet while they destroy this one, we're not going to be on that list. So, you know, how about do something for us so that we don't have to, you know, choke to death while they go off to another planet and live happily ever after?
No,
I mean, they have all this money, all right, and nobody wants to buy a legacy. I mean, they want to buy yachts, they want to buy senators, but nobody wants to buy a legacy. And I just, it stuns me that's the way they behave.
And it's, again, this comes back to our tax code. You think of the billionaires of the past or the rich people of the past. We had a significantly higher tax rate. You go back to the good socialist president, Dwight David Eisenhower. We had a 92% top marginal tax rate. We had a 56% corporate tax rate. We took the money. We invested in roads and bridges and all kinds of things. We paid for our wars even. We did all of those things because we taxed people. Now we're still borrowing. We're still spending. And we're adding up debt while simultaneously creating the largest billionaire class in the history of civilization, who, to your point, Rich, when they figure out how to colonize the moon or Mars or wherever, they're going to leave us behind on a planet that they destroy.
Yeah, I saw a perfect meme that said, all we have to do is eat one of the rich. Keep one, and the rest will fall in friggin' line.
There you go. Scott, you got a thought?
Yeah, that would be disturbing, but not as disturbing as them hoarding their wealth like they are. It's just, again, we've always talked about this. I don't understand how you have, to me, there's a limit of, like, if I made a certain amount of money, I'd eventually be like, I don't need any more money. Like, I'm human. Like, I only need so much. Like, you can only be so rich. You can only get so many toys and cars and everything else. So, like, what are you doing with your money? And what is it? Is it accruing interest? Like, I mean, I just don't understand. I'll never understand why greed is good in this country. It is evil, and I think it should be treated as such. Now, I'm not sure how we change things quickly, but they need to just maybe even pay their taxes voluntarily, like more taxes. I mean, I don't know at this point. There's a group, Patriotic Millionaires, that is a group of millionaires that support mostly Democratic candidates, and they focus on the fact that they're willing to pay more for their taxes. And I think we need more patriots like that, because if they paid more in taxes, I would assume that more people would pay less.
No, we need a sane, rational tax code. We need to go back to the Eisenhower tax code, where the bigger your shoulders, the more water you carry back to the cave. This isn't difficult. This is what worked. I mean, everyone loves to talk about how we need to go back to when times were great, when America was great, back to the 1950s. But nobody wants to go back to what made the country great. We had a really high tax code that we invested in education and roads and bridges and all of those things. We had good, solid employment with high union density, so families could support themselves on one single income. That's what made the country great, not a handful of billionaires who don't pay any taxes. Brett, you want to jump in?
Yeah, no, I agree with you entirely. I mean, and the last point I would make on this particular subject is pretty simple. When it comes to the billionaire class, what we need to understand is, I don't know exactly where this line is drawn, but there's an amount of money, there's a level of wealth that you can possess as an individual that just by possessing it, just by having it, on your property or in your, in your bank account or whatever, just possessing it makes you immoral. I mean, that's something that we need to understand. Hoarding this kind of wealth and shirking the kind of responsibility that comes along with it, the possession of that kind of wealth in itself makes you a terrible person, regardless of whatever actions you might take. And that's something that we need to understand, and that we put that kind of hoarding of wealth on a pedestal. And it's really time for that to be over. Someday soon, these protests that we're seeing in the street are going to start making their way over to the gated communities. And it won't take long until behavior changes after that.
Yeah, but here's the thing. We're told that, we have to give them all the money. We have to give them everything because they're smart. They know what to do with it. If we didn't have them, we wouldn't have any jobs. We'd all be standing around looking at each other.
Trickle-down economics has never worked, and it never will work. This relief package where people got $1,400, that money made it to the hands of the people, the average citizen, and they spent that money on the economy. That's how you boom the economy. You don't do it by giving it to people that have never created jobs with it, that basically shove it in mattresses and offshore accounts. It's time for us to start, doing something different. And if we don't, I'm telling you, we're about ready to fall off a cliff in this country.
I'm with you. Now, the other part of this that came out is there was another report done that, 55 of our, Fortune 500 companies paid zero federal taxes. And not only did they pay zero in federal taxes, that they spent $450 million on lobbying and buying politicians. And again, I go back to where I said, our tax code is working exactly the way it's supposed to, feeding the wealthy and allowing corporations to walk away from their responsibilities. And this is another one of these moments where you've got the Republicans. There's the gang of 10, 5 Democrats, 5 Republicans, who now have come up with this bipartisan plan for infrastructure that's going to raise no taxes on the wealthy or corporations. And this is just another way of the working class people of this country getting screwed again. Let's start with you, Rich. First thought?
It's garbage. I mean, at the end of the day, what they did is they've successfully allowed the filthy rich to get away with not having to do anything. And they're saying that this is going to come from like the COVID relief funds and stuff like that. Where does that come from? That comes from the tax-paying citizens. Once again, we've basically figured out how we can stick it on the shoulders of the average people out there that absolutely are desperate for assistance. And it's just not going to come this time. It's a sad, sad thing.
Scott, jump on that.
Yeah, I mean, the thing to note as a former fundraiser, I can say that they get this money from corporate PACs, but more importantly to them, they get the individual money. They get the money from the executive and their spouse. They get the money from their kids. They get the money from their golf course that they're at. I mean, it's something where it is so transactional where they'll have an event, and then they'll hand them a piece of paper, which is talking points, and they'll take a look at it, sort of. They'll be like, I'll make sure to get it done. Like, seriously, on both sides, we've had a problem where it's turned into this free-for-all, and they can't afford to lose. So, like, if you hear, oh, they lost Comcast $5,000. No, they didn't. They probably lost $100,000 because of that. So these corporations have huge impacts on campaigns. But what politicians, especially in Congress, are willing to do for $5,000 is crazy. And so we just need to be aware that they can be bought and sold. And I think one of the great things about AOC, and yes, one of the many great things, Rick, about AOC is that she can't be bought or sold because she's able to raise online and that crowdfunding for her campaigns. She doesn't need to beg or for money or anything like that. And I think we need more politicians like that. Most politics should be like that.
Brett, your thought?
Yeah, when I think about this, you know, this group of 10, I look at it a little bit differently. I see this as a bit of strategy. I think what we're doing is we're moving the goalposts. We're pushing things further on down the line. We're delaying and delaying and delaying. I think we're trying to push this off into past the summer and through to the fall, whatever it takes to make sure that no actual work is being done until after the next election cycle, because the last thing we want is for people to see the effects of this, for people to see the positive effects and, you know, and start grabbing up those jobs and doing these things, because that's going to make them vote for people you don't want them to vote for. So I believe all this, and keep in mind, I don't think this gang of five, I don't think there's another five out there who would join them. And two, I think this gang of five, even if they do find something to agree to, and it takes us 6 months to get there, I still think they pull at the last second, just like Lucy with the football, and vote against it, just like Obamacare, and just like every kind of bad faith negotiation that we've had with them, you know, for years now.
Yeah, I'm with you. I want to know who the other five are. That's all. I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back and talk about some of the stuff coming out of the DOJ. You know, was Donald Trump spying on me, on you, on anybody? He claims we were spying on him. Very weird. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show.
Nothing more American than workers standing up, and the union gives a voice to win. On the Rick Smith Show.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1974. That was the day workers at the Dodge truck plant in Warren, Michigan, went out on a wildcat strike. Workers were fed up with the endless attacks from management and disappointing contract negotiations the year before. Wildcat strikes had become almost commonplace in Detroit area auto plants the previous summer. Arbitrary discipline, deteriorating working conditions, and frustration with the union's response all led to the three-day walkout. 10 days earlier, 100 workers had staged a sick-in over working conditions. When the company threatened firings, more workers dropped their tools. Now, four had been fired, including the second shift chief steward. The response was immediate. Within an hour, the plant was virtually shut down.
6,000 workers voted to continue the strike. Wildcat leaders noted that virtually all the routine antagonisms among workers, young versus old, black versus white, women versus men, had melted away in solidarity. Socialist and anarchist workers in the plant published their recollections in a commemorative pamphlet entitled Wildcat, Dodge Truck, June 1974. In it, they state, quote, "We were excited by the collective decision of thousands of Chrysler employees to deny the authority of daily wage labor and, for even 4 days, to say no to the demands of the alarm clock, the production line, bosses, union bureaucrats, judges, and cops. It was, in fact, a total frustration with and rejection of all the things inside and outside the plant which exercise control over our lives." By the time it was over, 30 strikers had been arrested. Strike leaders were branded as communist agitators by the union, and area judges issued injunctions to end the picketing. The Wildcat may have failed, but workers had pushed back against management offensives.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So we're getting some news breaking out that Trump was spying on people, looking at journalists, their lists, going after Adam Schiff, two Democrats evidently that the Trump DOJ secretly sought data on, Schiff and Eric Swalwell. This again is another one of those things where what we know is bad. What we're going to find out, which is why we need multiple investigations across the board, going to be much, much worse. And here to share some thoughts on, well, what we're finding out with our DOJ. I've got Scott Dworkin from the Democratic Coalition, Rich Ojeda from No Dem Left Behind, and our good friend, the professor, Brett Pransky. Guys, thanks for sticking around.
Thanks, Rick.
So, you know, look at this this story breaking out of, Trump. The Trump DOJ going after Schiff and Swalwell. Tip of the iceberg. Scott, let's start with you.
Oh, yeah. No, we're just scratching the surface. Because if they did it to members of Congress, would they do it to me? Would they do it to me while I'm investigating him and covering on MSNBC in regards to the Russia probe and me actually revealing new details from sources and others? So, I mean, I'm really interested to see how many Americans he spied on. And I really am disappointed in the Republican silence about this, but they were in on it. So there we are. And now you have Barr today saying that he doesn't recall. So he's already using that line. I think that's a Gonzalez line.
Well, he's
line.
From the Reagan era. So, you know, that was popular during the Reagan era.
Right. And then so, but at least the inspector general did launch an investigation into it immediately after the DOJ recommended it. They do so today. And congressional leaders are also opening their own investigations on this, I think, in just the House side for now. But this is going to be quick and brutal. I don't think that this was done through appropriate channels. And I'm guessing that they abused the system more than this. So this is that residual effect. Remember when we were talking about how Trump would hurt us for years to come? This is that residual effect. So we're going to feel these shockwaves through the country of corruption in our institutions for a while. And we'll just have to push back every single time to make sure that they flush out the problem and bring new people in. Or if we don't do that, then we need to replace our electeds. And that's the only other option.
Yeah. Brett, you got any thoughts on this?
Yeah, one of the things that surprised me about the information that's out so far, and I do agree that this is probably just scratching the surface. I mean, just looking at a history of reports like this, they tend to get bigger over time. You know, as more information comes out, we tend to figure out that much more happened than just what was initially reported. The thing that really stuns me, though, is that before this stuff came out in the press, this was probably known internally. And there's a number of players in these investigations who are still in place today. And that I find really surprising. And I think we need to hold some folks accountable for that. everyone involved in this type of violation, you know, of our rights, we shouldn't be waiting for the story to come out before they, you know, before they're walked out of the building. Every single one of them should have been carrying a cardboard box full of their things on the first day of the new administration. So the fact that some of these people are still in place now is pretty stunning and something that we really need to address.
Rich, you got a thought?
This is an atrocious abuse of power. I mean, Donald Trump weaponized, you know, Jeff Sessions and Bill Barr to do things that absolutely they know were illegal. And we need to see these, you know, people prosecuted for this stuff. And we need to know exactly who all they went after. And, you know, just like you said, you know, if they're willing to go after Adam Schiff and Eric Swalwell, I mean, they went after every single news media outlet that was not favorable to them. This was nothing more than the actions of a wannabe dictator. And that's exactly what Donald Trump wanted. Donald Trump wanted to become a dictator. That's how come he launched a coup on January the 6th. And, you know, this is all leading up to that. You know, I believe that they felt that they were too big to ever have to worry about anybody ever challenging them. It is sad that you have Bill Barr and Jeff Sessions that absolutely we now know were willing to once again, like we were talking about, throw their legacies in the garbage over a man that has a 70-word vocabulary. And that's exactly what we have. That's exactly what took place.
Are you sure it's 70?
Bigly. I'm pretty bigly sure.
But here's this moment, though, guys. You know, when I look at this, you go, is this the moment that the Republican Party goes, this is too far? I mean, you go back to the Nixon era, and, you know, when Nixon left office, we then learned of all of the other crimes that came along. We've now turned criming into a verb, and this administration is, you know, this is the criming administration. We're going to find, you know, things on emoluments. We're going to find things on this kind of abuse of power, of spying on people, you know, all of these things, you know, like any mob syndicate. Is this the moment, though, that the Republicans go, this is a bridge too far? Let's start with you, Scott.
Yeah, they already did start recently. Just a minute ago, Matt Gaetz announced his support for Democrats and Republicans on the data breach. But he did mention Democrats specifically. So he actually supports the probe into this. Now, of course, he has other reasons for doing so. I think that the people who have spoken up are the people who supported impeachment for the most part. And we're going to, you know, I think that there's going to, it's going to take another election cycle for them to realize and get out of the bubble, for the bubble to pop in their head or whatever. For them to lose more in the Senate and also lose more in the House and realize, oh, this isn't working because no one agrees with us because our ideas are crazy. You know, at some point you have to have that reckoning. I think they're going to have to face that in 2022. I think this is going to be against all trends. I think that we'll have the biggest kind of midterm turnout ever in American history. And I think that we're going to win in places that no one would ever expect us to win in. States that you'd never, because we're going to be pushing back in every state. And, you know, groups like mine and Richard's and everybody's really, you know, getting warmed up. We've all been vaccinated. We've been taking care of our families. And now we realize, like, okay, we've got to resist even our own lawmakers at this point and make sure that we actually push forward a new agenda. So, I mean, I think a lot more Republicans will trickle out on this, and it'll be the same thing with January 6th investigating that. It'll be the same thing as more information comes out and you have these court cases. People love court cases. They love it. And this is, I broke into the Capitol. Let's see that dozens of times. And people will love it. Like, it's interesting. It's craziness. Like, it's like, what is this person doing? What's in their psyche? What were they thinking? And so you've got this, eventually they've got to turn against it because it's going to be pounding out for the next 2 years. And they're just giving us gold to put on top of it because they're silent or supportive. So I just don't see them doing anything but losing more. And that will be their reckoning.
And hopefully when they send those criminals to prison, they don't give them click pens. Hopefully they don't do that. But I'm with you to a degree. But the reality is, you know, what we've seen since January 6th is we've seen the Republican, you know, echo chamber begin to rewrite that history. My problem is, you know, you go back to Nixon and the Republican Party, you know, basically showed him the door. I think the more that we learn about the crimes that the Trump administration committed, the faithful are going to go, that's our guy. Crime in the right way. Rich, you want to jump in?
I kind of think that they're, you know, if you look at polling, you know, Donald Trump, when he lost, was, I believe, at 43%, and now he's at like 32%. You know, I believe that there's going to come a time when the Republican Party are going to finally say, you know, this is not our guy. But I think right now that they're still standing by him because I believe that they believe that he's all that they have for 2022. I think that they realize that there's a significant amount of people in this country, and I hate to say it, but it's the poorly educated that think that Donald Trump is the second coming of Christ. And I think that they're basically hoping that they can hold on so that in 2022, they can get those votes. It's absolutely crazy. You know, we're sitting here looking at these things. We're seeing these things that are blatant crimes that should be turning everybody off. But I'm going to be honest with you. You know, we can't assume that that's going to happen. I live in one of the reddest districts in the United States of America. And I'm telling you right now, I can go to Walmart today and literally 30% of the people in there are still wearing Trump hats and Trump shirts. So, you know, no matter how, you know, disgusting something comes out about Donald Trump, I'm telling you, it seems like some people still refuse to see the light.
No, that's what I said. I think the faithful will, well, good on him. See, you know, he filed bankruptcy 3 times. He's a good businessman.
He's one of us.
I don't get it. Brett, you want to throw in?
Yeah, that whole idea of, well, sure, he's a criminal, but he's our criminal. You know what I mean? I think that there's something to that, especially when you look at it kind of, because I live in one of these really red districts as well. So when I see this stuff, I ask, well, is my neighborhood changing their opinion? And also, when you look at this, I mean, it's kind of like if you're playing a poker game and you push all your chips in, that's it. You can't pull them out again. That's where I think the Republicans are right now, at least for the next cycle. Because what are they going to do? Come out and denounce Donald Trump and then say, you know what? All those voter suppression laws, yeah, we really didn't mean that. You know, they've gone all in legislatively, you know, at the state level, and they've put the pieces in place to try to overturn future elections. They've tried to whitewash the insurrection on 1/6. And, you know, and I just think it's too much for them to now all of a sudden, you know, find their way back. I think they'll do it eventually, but I think it's going to take several cycles for this to disappear. But once it happens, you won't be able to find anyone who used to believe otherwise. They'll all tell you, no, I was the one good one in the party who did it the right. It's kind of like, you know, 10 years after McCarthy, you couldn't find anybody who ever supported McCarthy. You know what I mean? They completely just, you know, not only did they denounce him then, but they had always denounced him all the way back to the beginning. This is what's eventually going to happen with Trump. I just don't think it's going to happen soon.
Right.
It's going to happen.
But here's the problem. 2022 is around the corner. You've got Georgia. You've got other states who are moving forward on being able to overturn elections retroactively, block people from being able to vote. So, you know, the Republicans are moving in their direction. They've chosen their path. And yet we've got a couple of senators who are holding up any prospect of stopping them from getting away with it and not getting anything done in the Senate. And, you know, let's start with you, Rich. I mean, at the end of the day, if we don't pass something, a voter rights bill, something like the For the People Act and the John Lewis bill, if we don't get that done, I say that, you know, it's already rigged before the first vote's even cast in 2022.
Well, you know, you're absolutely right. You know, and I hope that all of these bills that they're pushing that are basically disenfranchising voters, especially people of color, I hope that every single one of those are pushed to the Supreme Court and challenged, because I believe that's what absolutely needs to happen. What saddens me is that I am from West Virginia, and my representative in Washington, D.C. is failing to do what he should be doing, which is listening to the people. 79% of Democrats in West Virginia support the For the People Act. 76% of independents support the For the People Act. 74% of Republicans in West Virginia support the For the People Act. There's your bipartisanship. So Joe Manchin needs to finally do his job and represent represent the people and start doing what's right, because we're ready. Get rid of the filibuster. We're ready to pass infrastructure. That's going to do things. And that's why the Republicans are going to obstruct this, because they want to make sure that come 2022, they can look at everybody and say, the Democrats didn't get nothing done now, did they? And now you need to vote for us so we can finally get it done. And no, it's sickening.
I'm right there with you. You know, because, and you brought up the bipartisanship. You know, you got Joe Manchin saying we can't move forward on any of these bills like the For the People Act because it's not bipartisan. But I'm looking at all of these states that are rigging the state's election laws and doing the things that they've been doing. I don't see any bipartisanship there. I don't see any seeking to reach across the aisle. I see things in Texas where the Democrats are running out of the building so things don't happen. Scott, do you see the bipartisanship that Joe Manchin wants? Do you see that ever coming?
I mean, I think that eventually people of West Virginia will have their voices heard and he'll change his mind. He has a history of sometimes coming to his senses, and I think this will be another opportunity for him to change his mind. There's too many people that this affects. He's not a czar, and he should listen to the majority of people in the United States who he represents. He should listen to his own state as well, as Richard just went over the notes and the polling that came out. But I think a lot of this will actually backfire. Because a lot of these restrictive bills, who's interested in finding out how their vote, you know what I mean? Like, is it going to be a Democrat or Republican that makes sure that they're registered on time, that makes sure that they vote the right way, that they follow the rules? Like, it's going to be the Democrats. Republicans can be like, I'm not going to vote because elections don't matter and we're going to win. Blah, blah, blah. Like, I think that they're turning off so many people from trusting elections that it's going to backfire, and they're not going to be able to get people to show up at the polls in the midterms. You got to have that fire. And if it's that the Trumpers that they're counting on, I don't know a Trumper that I've spoken with, and I've spoken with a few, that actually would vote in 2022 because they don't trust elections anymore.
I hope that's true. Rich, I want to go back to you because Scott said he thinks Manchin's going to come around. Do you think he's going to come around?
You know, I will tell you, you know, on Monday, the Poor People's Campaign is going to kick off here in West Virginia. They're going to do a march here, and their focus is going to be basically saying it's time for Joe Manchin to do his job and represent the people. I just have a fear that, you know, corporate interests are right now basically, you know, more important to him than representing his people, because you can't sit here and tell me that he's doing this because he wants real bipartisanship. That's not going to happen. And he's smart enough. He's been in this game long enough to know that the Republicans will never meet him in the middle. They will ask for everything. The Democrats will bend and give them everything. And then at the last minute, the Republicans will still say, but we're not going to vote for it. And that's the way it's always been. It's time to stop that.
Now I'm with you, Brett.
No, I agree. I do hold out hope that the Joe Manchin is doing all this in more of a performative sense, so he can make a case later on that says, hey, I did everything I can. I tried as hard as I could for bipartisanship. You know, that's kind of where I'm thinking this might be going, because none of his arguments make sense. None of his arguments hold up as to why he's doing this. You know, he knows that the bipartisanship is not a thing that's going to happen, you know, in Mitch McConnell's, you know, Republican Senate. It's just never going, and he's smart enough to know this. So performing as if this is a potential thing that could possibly happen, it seems more like a campaign tactic than it does, you know, someone actually, you know, acting on their own values and so on. So hopefully, you know, this is performative, and at some point he'll just say, okay, I did everything I could. We exhausted every opportunity, and now I have to cast the vote.
I hope you guys are right. I hope he comes around. I hope we can get something pushed through, because we need a large infrastructure bill. We've got a lot of work to do. We got a lot of jobs to create. We got people to get put back to work, and we need to do it soon. Again, my fear, you know, is that this is part of the MO that the Republicans have done for almost ever. They're going to run the clock out. They're going to pretend to negotiate, and then nobody's going to vote for it. And we've got this era's Joe Lieberman in the form of Joe Manchin, where he's going to play along and keep the Democrats in that area. Just a great fear that I have, but we'll see again how it's going to play out. Going to take a quick break when we come back. Wingnut Week in review, and wow, what a crazy week this was. In fact, had to do Wingnut Week on Wednesday this week because there was so much to get to. Stick around. We'll be right back after this with our All-Star panel. Stick around.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1969. That was the day that labor leader John L. Lewis died. Born to a Welsh-American coal mining family in Iowa, Lewis became the leading champion of industrial unionism in the 1930s. He served as president of the United Mine Workers of America from 1920 until 1960. He was the founder of the Congress of Industrial Organizations. The CIO split off from the American Federation of Labor with the aim of organizing the thousands of workers who powered the U.S. industrial machine. Some public officials and the media accused the CIO of being infiltrated with communism. In 1937, Lewis delivered a speech in Washington, D.C. to deny these claims. The speech captured Lewis's commitment and passion for industrial labor organizing. He declared, quote, "The workers of the nation were tired of waiting for corporate industry to right their economic wrongs, to alleviate their social agony, and to grant them their political rights. Despairing of fair treatment, they resolved to do something for themselves. They therefore have organized a new labor movement conceived within the principles of the National Bill of Rights and committed to the proposition that the workers are free to assemble in their own forms, voice their own grievances, declare their own hopes, and contract on even terms with modern industry for the sale of their only material possession, their labor." He went on to say, quote, "Under the banner of the Committee of Industrial Organization, American labor is on the march. Its objectives today are those it had in the beginning, to strive for the unionization of our unorganized millions of workers and for the acceptance of collective bargaining as a recognized American institution."
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So it looks like the Nevada Democratic Governor Sisolak signed into law the fact that now Nevada will be the first primary in the country. Going to bump out Iowa and New Hampshire as first. I wonder how long Iowa and New Hampshire will play along with this. Also, a nice fun story from Nevada, as if things aren't going crazy enough around the country. Evidently, a group of folks there want teachers to start wearing cameras in the classroom so they don't talk about politics. No critical race theory. That was their push. We're gonna come to a point where they're just gonna implant chips in our head every time we talk about something. It's gonna be crazy times. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the Wingnut Week in a review, our All-Star panel, Scott Dworkin, Rich Ojeda, and Brett Pransky. Guys, thanks for sticking around. So what do you think of the idea of teachers wearing cameras so they don't talk about anything political? Let's start with you, Brett. You're the teacher.
I remember a few years back, there were a couple of movements on the right that asked people to turn in their teachers, turn in their professors. They were creating lists of people they considered to be subversive. And I know that because I was on several of those lists. And this kind of feels like that, you know what I mean? Let's cameras on teachers to make sure they don't discuss critical race theory or really anything that upsets the power structure. I'm not so sure that's such a good idea.
Yeah.
You know, I personally, it would be my last day teaching if somebody slapped a camera on me, because that's just not the way I would ever allow myself to do things. But yeah, it just seems pretty insane. I mean, or I could always do, you know, like like cops do when they're about to do something terrible, is just turn it off and just say, whoops, sorry, I must have had a malfunction in my camera, you know, and then just go on and teach whatever I want to teach.
Yeah.
But who knows? I mean, it just seems nutty.
Yeah, it is nutty. But it's all about reading, writing, arithmetic there, Rich. That's it.
Well, I tell you, I spent 4 years in the classroom after I retired from the military. And the one thing that I think that if you bring cameras to the classroom, that's liable to bring a lot of people and make them pretty fired up, is the fact that at the high school level where I'm from, it was all about trying to, and I taught ROTC, but at the, you know, high school I taught, it was all about teaching the exam. And that right there should be enough to really anger a lot of people to realize that they're doing it so that the teachers can get a passing grade at the end. But what's it really doing for their kids' future?
Yeah. One of the reasons that we opted our kids out of all the standardized tests. The school is like, but they'll pass. I go, I don't care if they'll pass or not. It's a stupid test. We're not playing. Yeah. And here in Pennsylvania, I had to have a religious reason. So, of course, my religion precludes my kids from taking a test. Because I believe in the ethic of reciprocity, do unto others, and there it is. But Scott, any thoughts on wearing teachers wearing cameras? We for that?
No. Okay. Right. It's just weird. Like kids' cameras, no. Like, you know what I mean? Like they're gonna, if it's gonna be affixed on the teacher, there's still kids that will come to the front of the room or the board. I mean, there's a lot of sick people out there. I know I would not want my kids on any video or anything on any social media myself. I don't like this whole video. Whenever you get video in schools and kids, you get people who are just terrible and they abuse it somehow. So let's just not do that. On the top of the invasion, they know if you know you're being watched, it can't be the same. You don't want to see how terrible your kid is. And how like the teacher has to respond to that. Trust me, it's not the same, because there are some crazy things told to teachers every single day, and the kid doesn't get suspended because they'll go back at them. And so if they look at their monitor when they're attacked or whatever, they can just report that and say, well, it's on the videotape because they heard it. If there's audio in the room, you see what I'm saying? It gets a little recording the kids. I think that's wrong.
Real quick, my thing too also is that before we start throwing them on teachers, how about we make sure that every cop has one?
There you go. There you go.
Well, keep in mind, schools are safe havens for a lot of kids. You know what I mean? And if you put them on camera, it's no longer that.
Yeah.
Because everything they're saying is being written. A lot of the things that are discovered by schools and administrators and people who care about kids doesn't get discovered because that kid knows they're on camera and they clam up. It's a really bad idea all around.
And you need context, right? So like you need to know if you have evidence proving the teacher did something wrong, and it's with an interaction with a student, let's say, you need to know what the other student said. And so like that would be recorded. So there's no like blanking out or anything. It's a bad idea. Sorry.
Yeah, there's no privacy whatsoever. And there's no, you know, even for the students. I mean, you know, it's a testament of where we're going as a society. I mean, we're in crazy, crazy times where we should be spending more time educating people so we don't have crazy politicians like Marjorie Taylor Greene, who, I'm kind of stuck again at how she got into Congress and some of the crazy stuff that's come out of her mouth. She doesn't believe in science. She doesn't believe in, well, she didn't believe in anything. She believes in God, though, but none of the other stuff or vaccines and it was evidently the COVID was a bioweapon, a whole bunch of craziness. Let's start with you, Brett. Thoughts on MTG?
I tell you what, given the fact I live in Ohio and it's been a rather strange week here in state politics, especially in terms of, you know, COVID and the vaccine. I don't know if everybody's seen the memes out there of people sticking forks to themselves, but you've got Ohio to thank for that. The idea of vaccines causing magnetism, which is just unbelievable. But it actually, when you think about how this story came to be, this idea that the vaccines cause magnetism comes from a woman named Sheila Tenpenny, who gave testimony in front of the Ohio House, and then once she did, that caught on everywhere, and it's been the cause of a lot of jokes, and that's all fine and dandy. It's how we should treat stories that are this strange, but we really need to understand the power of misinformation. I mean, keep in mind, this wasn't just, you know, just someone who didn't have an education or was easy to dupe or anything like that. She's a board certified physician. You know, she had to achieve scholarship at a pretty high level to, you know, to achieve that certification. And yet with the right amount of emotion and the right amount of repetition, anyone, absolutely anyone can fall victim to this stuff. And that's what I saw you just tried to stick that to your forehead right there. But, you know, and so while we should be making fun of these things, we should be joking about these things, we also need to understand just how serious an issue it is. If a board certified physician who had to achieve a ridiculous amount of scholarship, you know, in order to get that position, can fall victim to this kind of stuff, then anyone can, and we really need to take it seriously. The end result might be a joke, but how we got there is a very real problem we have to deal with.
Yeah, and thanks for jumping ahead to that one, but we were going to get to it. But here's the thing, and you said, you know, a whole bunch of misinformation. I say grift. I said this is a scheme to rip people off, because you had told me earlier she had like a boot camp, pocketed a cool $250,000 out of it.
Yeah, I had $650 a head to preach this stuff at an all-day boot camp. And yeah, she pulled in over $250,000 in a day. It could just be that this isn't necessarily someone who was taken in, but someone who just found their niche and found their way to make a little cash.
What's that they say about a fool and their money? She's collected it all. But Scott, I wanted to get some of your thoughts on you know, some of the craziness that we've seen. I don't like Marjorie Taylor Greene and this anti-vax nonsense that's been going on.
Yeah, I'm really against her statement. She should be banned from all social media forever. You know, I think that it's we need to equate it in the simplest terms possible, which would be that misinformation kills people. It straight up kills people. It hurts people. It gets people sick. It keeps the pandemic alive. It keeps America closed. Okay. And I think it needs to be as simple as possible. And otherwise people will spread things like, oh, well, magnets. And then that'll turn into like some kind of, oh, there's some kind of metal in it. Oh, there's something bad in it. You see what I'm saying? And it'll become simpler and simpler through the grapevine. And so that magnet, which is funny to us, then becomes something else, where they're like, well, they don't just have magnets, they have this, and they'll add on to it. It becomes a bigger GOP story. So yeah, I mean, usually there is a core part of it where it's like, but how do we make money from this? And if that end game does not exist, they don't move forward on anything.
That is it as well. I mean, if I was magnetic, the good thing is I'd never lose my keys. So, yeah, there's a start. Rich, you want to jump in the middle of that, or?
Yeah, well, first off, it's Marjorie Taylor Greene, as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, the things that she says is mind-numbingly stupid. You know, if English is good enough for Jesus, then it's good enough for me. You know, I mean, these are the things that come out of her mouth. And all we have to do is hope, and we have to pray that there's enough people in Georgia that have gotten tired of this garbage, that are sick and tired of watching this person spew pure conspiracy theories. We have to hope and pray that enough people in Georgia are done with this person, because I'll tell you right now, you know, she is dangerous with the things that she says. And just like Scott said, you know, she should absolutely be another one that is completely removed off of social media. If you're going to say things that a lot of these people are going to fall for and they're dangerous, then it's, to me, you know, it's somebody's responsibility to step up and say, we've got to cut them off. They've got rid of Michael Flynn now, doesn't have social media, I believe, from Twitter. Donald Trump doesn't. And you know what? It's time to take her. It's time to take Boebert. Get rid of these people.
I'm right there with you. And the last one I wanted to get to, because we're running out of time. But the last one, I got to get to Louis Go-Go Gohmert. You know, there are moments where I'm not quite sure what his point was, but he claims that someone at NASA told him that the Bureau of Land Management had the power and the ability to change the course of the moon's orbit somehow. I'm I'm not the teacher. I got out of, you know, out of school, you know, pretty by the skin of my teeth. But come on, Brett, How's the Bureau of Land Management? You know, how's Smokey the Bear going to change the orbit of the moon?
Oh, you mean that they can? I mean, I find that really surprising. I mean, it's a little hot in here right now. If you don't mind, I'm gonna jump off camera real quick, adjust the course of the moon so I can cool off my backyard a little bit. You know what I mean? Because I'm a little uncomfortable at the moment. Unbelievable. And now keep in mind, this is Louis Gohmert, you know, who is kind of like the godfather of Republican lunacy. I mean, he was here before. You know, Marjorie Taylor Greene and, you know, and Matt Gaetz and all these people are kind of taking the mantle, but Louis was here first. You know what I mean? He's been saying this stuff forever. He just hasn't been able to garner the spotlight quite like he did this week. And boy, he really had to push hard to get it. I don't know exactly what it was that he was asking or if he really thought something like that could happen, but, you know, it might be time for a wellness check on Congressman Gohmert.
Yeah. Do we do wellness checks on people in Congress? I mean, is there a way to look at a congressperson and go, you know, we're worried about you. We need to take a test, something, Scott, anything?
Apparently not. I mean, Gohmert is the village idiot. Like, if you find a village idiot in Congress, he is the king of the village idiots. Even, you know, if a tree falls in a forest, does Gohmert still understand how awful he is? I don't understand why someone could be, I don't use this word lightly, stupid. He is so stupid, and it's so dangerous what he says. It just can spread, and people repeat this dribble. So I just hope that, you know, I wish that there's more Kinzingers in the world to call out other Republicans so that this stops, because that's the only way they stop this nonsense, is some other Republican criticizing Gohmert for saying that.
When I saw that, you know, it was one of those things where you just go, how I had to watch it a couple of times, because maybe he misspoke. Maybe he wasn't really talking about the moon. You know, it's kind of like the guy a couple of years ago who was a Democrat from Georgia, who really took a beating over the fact that he was worried about, you know, the military putting too much stuff on an island in Hawaii because it would tip over. You know, you deserve a beating, you know, a kind of a beating for that, a mental beating for that. But, you know, this, other than nuking the planet, I don't know how you change the course of the moon. You got any thoughts, Rich, outside of nuking? Now, we don't want to nuke anything, no hurricanes. We don't want to go nuking anything.
These are the leaders of the free world. And I will tell you, that's scary. That should scare people when we see people like Lauren Boebert, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Louis Gohmert, and the things that they say. You know, and I will tell you that I think that, you know, some of the things that we're seeing today should be the reasons why we go back and revamp the education system, you know, to make sure that we, you know, critical thinking. You know, this scares me when you realize that we've got people that are technically the leaders of the free world that actually think this way, that would even allow something like that to basically cross their lips is scary. And I mean, something has to happen. Something has to get done.
And that's not even the craziest thing that Gohmert said this week. The craziest thing he said is that he actually talked to Capitol policemen the day before the riot. They had intelligence that people were going to come and dress up like Trump supporters, and they were going to cause trouble. He had intelligence, he said. He knew, and yet he chose to do nothing, which is kind of interesting.
Sad.
Just the world that we are in. But, guys, I appreciate you taking time for us. Appreciate your expertise and your knowledge. Good stuff, guys. Thanks so much.
Airborne.
Get vaccinated.
Ooh.
There you go. But again, like I said, the most bizarre thing you got there is Gohmert saying, I talked to somebody. We knew, but chose to do nothing. Now, if that were true, do you think he'd have voted for the January 6th commission so they could get to the bottom of that? Maybe find that cop and the information? It's all BS. Anyway, if you missed any of today's program, you can download it at our website, thericksmithshow.com. Get the app on your smartphone. Take the program on the go wherever you go. And as always, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Thanks so much for tuning in. You've got questions, comments for the All-Star panel, shoot me an email. I'll make sure I get it to them. Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.